Thanks very much, Efka. It's actually very nice for the speakers to see right next to the podium the bullet holes, because it gives us a good reminder not to overstay our welcome. Good morning, everyone. What I'd like to do is to try and talk you through the things that we've done over the past few years, what we've learned, and some of the mistakes we've made. So when we started off, we had an idea of what the world would be in the future. And as always happens, it never quite turns out to be the case. And because we do text mining, this picture actually shows a very good problem with text mining, that they've taken a perfectly good word called tomorrow and put a dash in the middle of it, which turns it into something quite different. It's still relatively early in the morning, and I know you're all looking forward to diagrams like this about the semantic web and lots of network stuff, but I've left most of those out because this is really as much in depth as I really want to go. What I will say a bit, though, to begin with, is something about structures, which is unavoidable in terms of chemistry. Chemists really like structures. Seeing the structure is absolutely intrinsic to what chemists are trying to look for. So it's very important in terms of semantically looking at our data and saying what's in there, that we can convert names to structures and put these structures in a way that people can both see and can be read by computers. Because you've got the structure and it shows you what the compound is, what it looks like, what it might react with, and what other things might look like that compound that do similar things. So a lot of what I've got to say is all about structures. We've been doing this for 3 years now. When we started, we wanted to explore all sorts of things with making our content more discoverable for people to really find the compounds that we were publishing our articles about, to make them better used, which is good for us and good for our authors. Also to aid some things in terms of understanding of subject terminology and how it's used and what it means, and showing related content together, and to link out to other sources across the web to really use the power of the web. Other reasons why we are similar to all publishers, we've had XML for years, and we've been using it to do paper and to do HTML. And it's a lot more powerful, can do a lot more powerful things with it, as we've seen already from the guys at Elsevier and Nature. But also another powerful driver really was we're lucky enough to be in Cambridge with Peter Murray Rust, and we've worked with Peter for a long time. And people like Peter and Henry Rezepa are really a huge catalyst to what chemistry can become. So it was a real challenge to take some of these ideas and to see how we could actually put these into a practical form. So once we decided we were doing it, the first thing, starting from nowhere really with this, is to try and find standards by which we can put this information into our content. And there are some things out there that we could easily pick up and use. The INCHI, which is a developing standard for identifying chemical compounds in a computer-readable manner, had just gained its first real release when we started. In terms of subject matter, there were some ontologies from the biomedical field. Bioinformatics was a lot further forward than chemistry at this stage. So we were able to pick out some of the things that overlapped our biological and chemical content, to pick out some real subject terminology. There were things that were just there and were useful. The IUPAC Goldbook, which was a dictionary but online and something that we could point to. RDFNL is a distribution format, a good wrapper for the information, but there wasn't really any agreed way of how to put chemical information in there. But this subject terminology probably covered about 30 to 40% of our content, which was good enough for us to make a good start on. I'll just give a couple of quick screenshots of how we've implemented this, and it's really by marking up HTML so people can highlight bits in HTML. Green bits here are chemical content, blue highlightings, biological content, and pink things are compounds. So you click on a compound, you can get a little pop-up of what this thing looks like, and you can click out to a compound page saying more about that compound and links out to other sources on the web. From some of the subject terminology, you can bring out definitions so you can understand really what the paper's more about, and again link out to other material that's about the same content. The way we did it, we dropped all these processes into an existing production process where we had technical editors looking at the scientific content of a paper, and we dropped a text mining package into it and then got them to tidy up afterwards. And this was really important because the text mining can only really find certain things. It's really important for us to do the manual QA on top. Because for chemistry, text mining, you're looking at the text, and actually not much of the text really tells you the chemical compounds that are there. In this example, there are 20 compounds in this paper. And of those different ones, just the words that are used to describe them here mostly are actually not individual compounds, they're groups, or they're really unhelpful things like just compounds 9 to 14. And the compounds 9 to 14 are actually out in the graphics. If you're lucky, those structures actually correspond to single compounds and they're easy to get identifiers out. But often they're generic compounds, so they can actually mean several different things. We're lucky we don't deal with patents, but a compound in a patent can actually expand out to tens and hundreds and even thousands of compounds. So from the thing we really learned is actually text mining is the easy bit, and having spent a while going around telling everyone that they should do text mining, it's actually cleaning up afterwards that's the really hard stuff. When you're publishing single compounds and the authors, single papers and the authors are seeing them, it's important to get that stuff right. And certainly where you're looking at images a lot and having to make a scientific decision on what's important in that paper, we spent a lot of time cleaning that stuff up, much more than we actually did on the text mining. So the choices about where you do this annotation, we're doing it at the moment, we're doing it by the editors at the publication stage. So can the authors do it, and can it be done after the publication? Well, if the authors did it all, it'll come to no surprise to many of you in the business that it can be difficult enough to get an author to provide a properly formatted Word file without adding any of this extra stuff. But the people at Microsoft Research are actually doing some, done some interesting stuff in at least testing out whether authors can be expected to help out in this. So they're launching a couple of open source plugins for Word. One's an ontology add-in, so if a user wants to do this, they can open their Word document, load in a set ontology, and then use that to help mark up their own document. Takes some basic knowledge for people to do this, and quite a lot of motivation. Particularly on the chemistry side, this has not actually been released yet, but the Chemistry for Word plugin for Word, again from Microsoft Research together with Peter's team at the University of Cambridge, will be a plugin to actually make sure that what you're writing in the Word document is chemically valid. You can do some drawings, and you can switch between drawings and other representations of the chemistry. Really, really powerful, and it'll be really interesting to see how authors manage this, not least because we'll have to build this into our publication systems. So authoring, it may be possible, but there's a lot that it requires from the readers, from the authors to learn and to buy in and to really spend their time doing it. So the readers can also contribute to this. I'll say a bit more about ChemSpider, which became part of the RSC last year. But while we developed a prospect markup, they developed something similarly called ChemAntis to go and mark up HTML documents in a similar way, to mark up compounds, to bring up structures, and to link out to other internet resources. And they did some very useful tools to help through a web interface to curate the results of text mining and what other people have found. So in this example, in the red box, it's picked up a compound and the user can decide whether that's right or not, whether to deposit straight into the database or whether to click, whether that's a good or a bad bit of markup. And that's something that can be moderated and changed later. So it's a way by which the readers can help tidy up some of this information. We've still got challenges, not least the manual QA. Getting chemical structures out of images can be made easier, and that's something we're working on to reduce our effort. But also in terms of subject coverage, you have to have useful, as productive identifiers, as I've called them. You have to have something useful to describe chemistry in a meaningful and standard manner. And that's not all available at the moment in a public form. For the RSC, what we also want to do is to build our markup technologies together, so using the best of what the RSC and what ChemSpider developed, Prospect and Chemantis, to help us mark up our backfile. And that's something that we can easily see that we can put out to some community curation to help us identify what's important and what needs to be have additional QA in our backfile markup. Quick shout out, because I wasn't sure who'd say what this morning, but people doing similar things, marking up stuff and then using editorial effort to try things out. Dan said about Nature Chemistry, but also Portland Press and their Utopia recent release of having an additional PDF viewer to use a database to link out to additional semantic content. Interesting things. So a bit about what we've learned over 3 years and what the results are, because I'm sure I'd get asked at the end. We've marked about 4,000 articles up. It's quite a few, and got a lot of interesting chemical content out, 40,000 compounds. We've done some in-house ontology development to help expand the coverage of chemistry that we publish. And we've made these open so that other people can use it. And this isn't a big development house developing these ontologies. This is asking editors, see what do you think? How should we call this? And how should we structure these things? And it's quite a philosophical debate, and as many philosophical debates can end up in a heated punch-up at the end of it with different opinions. We haven't done much in 3 years to change the user interface. Part of this was because we've put it right in the middle of an existing publishing platform. We're also moving to MarkLogic, and that's going to be, our first beta of that for the RSC is going to be released in the next month. But we can do a lot more with the semantic content in the XML within a publishing platform like MarkLogic. But also, we don't think we have all the answers. There are much better things for us as a chemistry publisher to do than to try lots of different interface things. Things like on subject browsing. Actually, I don't think at the moment there's a compelling way of bringing all this subject terminology together. This is one of the best examples, I think, that exists. Go PubMed, of applying the gene ontology to PubMed abstracts. And it's a really powerful tool and really good for information professionals. But it's really complicated for an end user to do. And I don't really think that someone coming in to read a paper is going to want to look at things in that kind of detail. Get asked about usage. We've had more HTML usage. It's helped push up the proportion of people looking at HTML compared to PDF. And the stuff gets used. It's relatively small compared to people who come in to look at our PDFs and the full text HTML. So in terms of actual usage, it's relatively small. It's really popular with authors, and it's really popular with people that we show it to because they can see what this is going to grow into. But it needs a change in user behavior, not least because it's actually not put in a great way on our own site at the moment. It's you've got to choose to click through to get to it. And it also doesn't fit the expectations, what articles readers expect to see. The RSC doesn't have a critical mass of chemistry publishing. It's the idea, again, of multiple platforms and all platforms doing different things. You can get something great when you come to the end of a search result, but people need to be able to recognize and expect similar things in a similar way. So one of the things that we've really tried to encourage and talk to the publishers about, and we're all doing similar things, is to try and encourage that this stuff is all done in a similar manner. Where we've got subject terminology, we've released them and invited people to use them. We've helped set up, along with any other publishers and other organisations, a lot of who are here today, set up an INCHI Trust to support this developing standard for chemistry. But also talking to other publishers in a pre-competitive way, just to ring people up and say, how should we put out this chemistry in the RDF? Because if we just can come to a decision ourselves, that will become a de facto standard, and it then make it easier for a user to find this stuff. So rather than concentrating on the user interface, the important thing for us has been how we use this to find real, to try and solve real problems rather than to try and push out solutions that there may not be a real need for. One way that I think this is coming actually quite soon, the Pistoia Alliance is essentially set up by a group of the pharma companies who've got very powerful business reasons for making lots of their operations standard in the next few years, because a lot of the patents are running out. They're going to have to work in a much more straitened business environment. But the Pistoia is a pre-competitive collaboration to actually build agreements about delivering data standards in a certain way, to make sure that publishers and software providers push information out to pharma companies in a standard manner. And there's really going to be really powerful business reasons for this to happen. So I really think that once this is sorted out to push data in a standard way to pharma, that's actually will be the default for everything. It's a real compelling use case. Similarly for ontology development, lots of companies have got in-house ontologies describing compounds in different ways. And they don't interlink, and there's really good reasons for these things to be brought together to be made more open. That reduces their costs a lot and provides a very good resource for linking things together on the web. So the first Pistoia Alliance funded project has actually started. There's a meeting today at the EBI in Hinxton near Cambridge. But publishers, the RSC involved and others, to actually look at the first cut of pushing standard information through to pharma. ChemSpider, this is something that's a project that's been going for about 3 years as well now. The RSC acquired it last year, and it was set up as a free-to-access online database, really to bring together the public information that's on the web, public chemical information, which is often in very disparate sources, to bring it together under a single used interface and to make it structure searchable. And structure searchable, as I've said, is something that chemists are really interested in. To use this to provide web services off it, and to actually make means of a deposition and curation platform, so that actually users can come in and put their own data into it and can also make comments about the accuracy of the data that's in there. And this is really a way by which we can build what we've done into users' real requirements. Users want to look at public chemical information, and we can use this to use our semantic information to help drive this. If you look for a structure in ChemSpider, you can bring back the drawing and physical property information. There's also a wide variety of links. You can link out to where to buy this compound, publications, whether freely accessible or behind from non-open access publishers. You can link data to, you can either load data into it, or you can link to other data, bring in related reactions, Wikipedia, and link through to patents. So it's actually being able to search publicly for a compound and bring back a lot of really useful information that otherwise you'd have to search in many places to find. Chemistry online, in terms of, there's a lot of disparate sources, and there's a wide variety in there between, there's a lot of duplication and a lot of difference in quality. And the user always should be aware about the quality of the stuff that's out there. This is our favorite example, because it's an example of a database that is never actually correct. This is something that's been pointed out to PubChem for a couple of years now. If you search for methane, and I hope people can recognize methane as a carbon and four hydrogens, if you search for methane in PubChem, you bring back the item for charcoal. Methane's not charcoal, and it's not diamond, and it's not all those other things that are there. So it's very important that where you're bringing information like this together, there should be a means to curate it. It's very difficult, actually, to say, for people to decide what something like Taxol is. Anthony Williams, who set up ChemSpider, had a number of exemplar tests where he invites the community to actually decide what the right compound is. You can look up something like Taxol, and there can be 10 different entries, all of which are chemically different. And what's the right one? It can take a lot of expert advice and consultation to actually work out what's right. Molecules also have timelines. When it's first discovered, it may not be completely chemically accurate, and actually what a chemical is understood to be changes over time. And there has to be a way to clean up the public data. We think this is a really valuable thing for us to do as a learned society. So there's ways of what we call crowdsourcing chemical curation. Users can come in and comment and say this record's wrong. It's moderated, so there's experts that look at it and there's master curators. But it's a way by which people can spot what's wrong, correct it, and it'll be updated immediately. So what we're doing with our RSC Prospect and ChemSpider is building a lot of our expertise together, which is enabling us to mark up and help clean up the public record while also making sure that our own publications can be easily found and used. And we think this has really turned around a lot to what we can actually achieve with chemistry online. Because of the tools we've got and the expertise we've got, we can help to make much more of the chemical information that's out there more accurate. We can help to mark it up and make it structure searchable. And we can do this for public sites, and we can do this for other publishers as well. So it's a very important way by which we've turned what we started to do with just marking up our own content to push those out in feeds, to be able to really start changing, we think, the way that chemistry will appear on the web in future, and to start taking some help to the public chemistry sources, and to make it easier for the real user to make a judgment about what the content, the quality of the data is. We've heard a lot yesterday as well about where the data goes, and this is a really good place for people to put their data in. If it's a site they're using, they might be more likely to stick their own data in there. So just to wind up really, what's really helped us, the standards are great to start off with where they exist, and they're not often perfect, and we all have to be practical, but they're great to be able to work with. Real use cases for things like Pistoia to help push through what standard ways of delivering semantic information will be are really important, and we can all try lots of things and see whether they'll take root with the user, but those real use cases are so important. But you do find out by trying things, as we've done, you actually end up somewhere completely different from where you originally thought you were going to, and older if not wiser. And I certainly wouldn't bet on changing user behavior anytime soon. It's difficult unless you can do it with the normal things that help humans change, like greed and vanity and other nicer nudges as well. So that's almost me. The City of the Future, this is another view of it which looks alarmingly like Dubai, actually. But here it says that the city of the 21st century, a city of science, of atomic power, of space travel, and of high culture. And I'll leave it to you to decide how many of those we've actually achieved so far. Thanks very much.